Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. This is Scott Reich of Crime Talk, and thank you for tuning in. We have a busy docket today. First, Ahmaud Arbery case, a case update, some new video, some new facts, and man, did you guys beat me up in the comments or what? So let's talk about the law and see if my comments will change. Second, the Lori Vallow case. We have a case update, and just like I had predicted, it came true. Third, we're going to announce our dumb criminal of the week from last week that you all chose, and we have a new contestant today. Let's talk about it. Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. This is Scott Reich of Crime Talk, and thank you for watching. If you have not already done so, we would ask that you please hit that subscribe button, hit the like button as well, and leave us a comment below. As I talked about in our opening plug, a case update on the Ahmaud Arbery case, and it's new facts, new information. And man, did I get beat up in the comments by you all. Now, we give the McMichaels the presumption of innocence. I'm simply saying this doesn't look good for the McMichaels. Now, a lot of people said, this guy has a criminal history. Well, we talked about that. And although we have new video showing Mr. Arbery in the home under construction, there's video, there's nothing to indicate that he was breaking the law. An unoccupied dwelling under construction like that is not a dwelling. It's not a felony. It's at most a criminal, at most a misdemeanor trespass. And the owner of the property who released the video, first of all, didn't even think that the two people in the video, the one of Mr. Arbery in the house and then Mr. Arbery being shot by the McMichaels, didn't even think they were the same person. But the owner of the property also states that there was nothing stolen or missing, and he certainly wouldn't have called the police and didn't want any sort of vigilante justice to take place. For those of you who do not know or are not familiar with the Mr. Ahmaud Arbery case, just a quick recap. And if you want to see a more detailed analysis, you can see the videos we put out last week, which go through a very specific timeline. So on February 23rd, it's alleged that Ahmaud Arbery was out for a jog. And whether he was out jogging, whether he was walking, or doing whatever, it's our position that what took place is going to put the McMichaels, the father and son duo here, in a precarious situation. They got a break because the senior McMichael was an investigator for the district attorney's office responsible for investigating this case, who put the brakes on any arrest and or investigation early on. In fact, it's reported that the police officers on the scene were going to arrest both Mr. McMichaels at the scene, but when they contacted the district attorney's office, because it involved a homicide, the district attorney herself said, don't arrest them. So the Brunswick district attorney, Jackie Johnson, ultimately recused herself because she was familiar with the senior Mr. McMichael, Gregory McMichael. Another district attorney handled the matter and basically wasn't going to file charges. Then a video came out last week of the Ahmaud Arbery shooting. And what it shows was that the McMichaels call the police and say that they believe a man, a black man, was out burglarizing property and that they were coming up on him. And the 911 calls are out there. You can take a listen to them. And it clearly states that they don't know if this was the guy that did anything, if anything was stolen. He couldn't say. But the younger McMichaels had a firearm stolen from his vehicle some 2 months earlier, and apparently was out to see if someone was responsible for it. It was on a heightened state of alert. Now, the McMichaels had claimed that they were basically going to make a citizen's arrest. That was what they had pitched to the police originally. And last week, we discussed the citizen's arrest statute, and you had to witness somebody basically fleeing from a felony or actually engaging in a felony to do anything. But then you actually have deadly force. And this is why I said these two individuals, Mr. McMichaels, are both in trouble, all right? So let's take a look at the law. Let's take a look at the jury instructions in Georgia that would be given as it relates to deadly force. And remember, when you're using deadly force, it's an affirmative defense. So you're saying you did the crime, but you were justified in doing what you did. And just so we're clear, we're going to read from the actual jury instructions. And these are the Georgia criminal jury instructions, that were last revised in 2003, specifically 3.02.10, justification, use of force in defense of self or others. A person is justified in threatening or using force against another person when, and to the extent that he reasonably believes that such threat or force is necessary to defend himself or a third person against the other's imminent use of unlawful force. A person is justified in using force that is intended or likely to cause or great bodily harm only if that person reasonably believes that such force is necessary to prevent death or great bodily injury to himself or a third person, or prevent the commission of a forcible felony. All right? So a couple of things that are important there. It's a reasonable person standard that the force is necessary to prevent death or great bodily injury. All right? So if somebody comes at you with a bare fist knuckle fight and you bring a knife to the fight, one could say that you didn't use the reasonable force necessary. Same analogy, if you come to a fight and you have your fists and the other person has a gun, not a fair fight, okay? Unreasonable force. Had that case, little fight, guys going upstairs, think they're going to go fight in the backyard. One guy takes his shirt off, ready to go. The other guy pulls a gun out and shoots him in the chest. Not reasonable, not self-defense. The law in the state of Georgia continues. And this is what I think the McMichaels are going to have a problem with, all right? And we'll talk about Georgia's stand your ground, but let's take a look at this. A person is not justified in using force if that person, A, initially provokes the use of force against himself with the intent to use such force as an excuse to inflict bodily harm upon the assailant. The other sections are not applicable, but it says is attempting to commit or is committing or fleeing after the commission or attempted commission of a felony, or was the aggressor or was engaged in a combat by agreement. Clearly not applicable here. So we have two issues that the McMichaels are going to have. One is that a person is not justified in using force if that person, A, initially provokes the use of force. Now, one would probably say that if two men come down the street at you in a vehicle, you crisscross the street trying to get back and say, oh no, we want to talk to you. And one man gets out holding a shotgun saying, I'm going to hold you here. That, ladies and gentlemen, is initially provokes the situation. These two could have driven alongside of Mr. Arbery, called the police and say, we've got this guy. We think he's done something suspicious. But guess what? They didn't do that. All right. You don't get to have vigilante justice. And then the other section under the Georgia criminal jury instruction, a person is not justified in using force if that person was the aggressor. Once again, if you initially provoke, you're the aggressor, you're the person that wants to start something, and I would think the person more justified in being able to defend oneself is the guy that only has his fists and his feet versus the guy who has a shotgun with his dad in the car backing him up with a pistol. We also know under the definitions, a forcible felony means a felony involves the use of threat or physical force or violence against any person. So was this individual engaging in a forcible felony? He did not have a gun. Mr. Arbery, even if he's alleged to have grabbed the gun, which one could do, I've seen it. I've seen people slap firearms away, or as cases come about, if somebody points that at them, it's a menacing. You have a right to defend yourself, but you cannot initially go put a gun in somebody's face and they try to defend themselves and then say, ooh, he was going to hurt me. You can't be the initial aggressor. And that's what the McMichaels are. And so for everybody out there saying, oh, you're not giving me these two individuals a presumption of innocence, I am. I'm just explaining the law that applies, okay? And when you look at the video that we have and the law that applies, there's a reason why once the Attorney General's office said we had more than enough evidence to make an arrest for a homicide case, once they looked at the videos, they presented that information to a judge. And now they have charges pending against them. The judge said there's more than enough evidence for probable cause to arrest. So it's not just me, as some people accuse me of saying, oh, you're just going along with the mainstream media, Scott. You're just, you know, you're not looking at this. I am. And guess what? If the McMichaels had come and hired me, I'd be explaining to them the same information that I'm explaining to you, that the law puts him in a precarious position. That's why I said, and no one will defend the Second Amendment or any of the amendments quicker for anybody than this guy. This guy has an arsenal of firearms, okay? I love firearms, but as I expelled last week, they complicate everything, all right? And look at the jury instruction definitions. What would use the reasonable force necessary, that a reasonable person would deem necessary? So if you have a gun and the other guy doesn't, it's going to be tough for you to say, unless he's freaking Bruce Lee, that you are in danger. You could have held somebody there till the police arrived. And the fact that you even got close enough to do that shows that you are, in fact, the initial aggressor. A couple of more jury instructions before we move on. This is the reasonable belief, the doctrine of reasonable belief, jury instruction 3.02.12 of the Georgia criminal jury instruction and the case law that's tied to it. In applying the law of self-defense, a defendant is justified to kill, use force against another person, in the defense or self of others. The standard is whether the circumstances were such that they would excite not merely the fear of the defendant, but the fears of a reasonable person. For the killing use of force to be justified under the law, the accused must have really acted under the influence of these fears and not in a spirit of revenge. And then one of the final instructions, what the facts are in this case is a matter solely for you, the jury, to determine under all of the facts and circumstances of this case. One further instruction, just so people don't think I'm making it up, because that's what I was accused of, and just being some sort of mainstream media guy that's just going along with the mob. No, one who is not the aggressor is not required to retreat before being justified in using such force as is necessary for personal defense, or in using force that is likely to cause the death or great bodily harm if one reasonably believes such force is necessary to prevent the death or great bodily injury to himself or a third person, or to prevent the commission of a forcible felony. That is Georgia's stand your ground, no retreat law. Okay, I had all kinds of people leaving me comments saying, Scott, you're an idiot. Georgia, you can stand your ground. You can do that. Okay, no. Let's take a look at the law. One who is not the aggressor is not required to retreat. I would submit to you, and I think a district attorney will argue, that when you get out of the car with a gun, when you chase somebody down, or at least come up and follow them, don't take words out of context here, and you get out of the car and hold somebody at gunpoint, you are the initial aggressor. The McMichaels are the initial aggressors. Now, A lot of people have said, well, there's this new video out there. Okay. What does it change? Nothing. All right. Even if the Michaels wanted to say they were going to make a citizen's arrest, they had to know a felony was taking place. They had to have witnessed it. When they called 911, they didn't see anything themselves. They had no personal knowledge of that. And like I said, I'm not out there saying these two don't deserve the presumption of innocence. They're probably going to have to go to trial. I get it. But if I was their attorney, one of my jobs as the attorney is I have to tell people the good, the bad, and the ugly. And the ugly is, here's the law. The McMichaels did everything wrong. Now, a lot of people wanted to say Mr. Arbery was out. He wasn't out jogging. Once again, who cares? What fact does that change? None. It doesn't. Even if the video clearly shows he's in the property. The property owner said, hey, no harm, no foul. We don't even know the McMichaels. We certainly wouldn't want them to go out and engage in this vigilante justice for sure. And then a lot of people had comments and said, well, this guy had a criminal history. So what? Not coming in at any trial. Even if there are reports that the senior McMichael may have worked on one of the cases where Mr. Arbery was arrested when he was a juvenile for having a firearm. He's had no personal interaction with this guy recently. Not coming in to evidence. And the younger McMichael surely had no interaction with him whatsoever. The defendant's criminal history when he was a juvenile and a shoplifting as an adult, not coming in. So if people want to say, well, they were justified, he had a criminal history. Okay, well, what if you have a terrible driving record? Does that mean you deserve to get shot? What if you've been to prison and you haven't been in trouble in 40 years? Does that mean you deserve to get shot and say, well, he had a criminal history? Of course not. Now, I get it. There's a lot of people that want to just say one side was right and one side was wrong. And there's always that gray area. There's the in-between. But like I said, boy, did I get beat up. People saying, I'm unsubscribing from you, Scott, because you're not supporting the McMichaels. I'm just calling it the way it is. And I'm telling you, what I'm telling you is what I would be telling them if they were my client. And I would tell them, you did everything wrong. And the only shot you probably have is your claim that when this thing goes off camera, that something must have happened so quickly and so suddenly, even though you maintained the firearm, you felt that somehow you were threatened by a guy that had no gun, that had no weapon, and was running away from you, trying to get away from you. I'm not jumping to conclusions. We're talking facts and we're talking the law. And some people like a certain fact, want to ignore others, and they refuse to look at the law. And if these two gentlemen were not the initial aggressors, you know, things would be a lot different. What really upset me last week was the fact that these two got a pass for not being arrested at the scene. I'm telling you, someone who's practiced law for 25 years, criminal defense, that if that were you or me, and that had gone down, and you weren't a former police officer, and you were not a former investigator to the district attorney's office and had a friend relationship, work-friend relationship with an individual there, you and I would have been arrested. And the fact that it took a media outcry, a public outcry for this to go wrong, I told you last week that's offensive because no one should be above the law. So a couple more comments on the Ahmed Arbery case. Now, the man who actually took the video that has been really the big news of the day is a gentleman by the name of William Roddy Bryan. Now, he says that he had nothing to do with this case and has nothing to do with the McMichaels. But what is really interesting is, to me, is that how this video was released to the public. You know, we have to take Mr. Bryan at his word. He has not been arrested. there were some comments made generally. I don't know if the guy knows the McMichaels. I don't think he does. I don't know why he was in the neighborhood, but apparently the man has had death threats. But he produced a video, which frankly, why is that a bad thing? You know, for years we've asked for body-worn cameras, and now we got them. And some people say, well, now we don't want them. No, it's good to have them. And frankly, it helps resolve cases faster when it's when we have body-worn cameras, because it just shows the way things are. Another interesting point was that the video that caused all the stir last week of Mr. Arbery being shot by Mr. McMichael was the fact that it was released to a radio station in Georgia. It ultimately turns out that the video was released by an attorney, and they McMichaels have actually said that this was in fact, this may be their attorney. He hasn't entered his appearance in the particular case, but he stated that he has in fact released it because he wanted transparency in this matter. Frankly, I don't think that video helps his potential clients if that were his his intentions. I don't know if he's going to take the case, but one would have to wonder whether he had permission to do so from his clients. That could be a potential breach of attorney-client privilege. The police, it sounds like, already had the information, but I sure hope he had permission from his clients to do that. You don't release stuff like that unless you have your client's permission and authority to do so. It's going to get interesting. So for those of you that are mad at me, I don't know what to tell you. This is a law. These are the facts. And as I tell my clients, I will tell you the good, the bad, and the ugly, and give you the best opinion that I can. And when new information comes along, my opinion may change. But based upon the new video of Mr. Arbery in the rental or in the house under construction, doesn't change my analysis. The McMichaels did everything wrong in this particular situation. They should just call the police and let the professionals handle it. Next on the docket, a Lori Vallow case update. Well, as you may recall, a couple of weeks ago, the attorney for Ms. Vallow filed numerous subpoena deuces tecums with various agencies. In particular, one was with the Attorney General Office in the state of Idaho. And I seem to recall mentioning that the subpoenas were overbroad and that motions to quash would in fact be filed because he's not entitled to a lot of these, a lot of this information. And it was a fishing expedition. And that if charges were going to be filed as it related to the death of Tammy Daybell, that they would get that information in a timely manner. Well, guess what? Sure enough, late last week, the Attorney General's office filed a motion to quash, making the exact same argument that, well, that I just made. The judge hasn't ruled on it, but I anticipate the motion will be quashed, particularly in light of the performance that we saw at the Vallow bond reduction hearing. I'm not sure. We talked about it strategy-wise. What relevance is that going to bring in? I don't get it. I don't understand what Mr. Means' defense is, what his strategy here is whatsoever, and subpoenaing documents that could actually hurt your client like that. You try and go get them on your own. You only subpoena as a moment of last resort, because when you subpoena something, it's returnable to the court. And then the other side gets an opportunity. You don't just get it for yourself. You subpoena it, everybody gets it. Next, let's talk about Alex Cox. That's Lori Vallow's brother. Alex Cox is the gentleman that shot Charles Vallow, who was Lori Vallow's fourth husband, because Chad Daybell is number five. Well, there was a lot of speculation swirling around, and I have to admit, maybe even a little bit me, that, boy, it seems like Ms. Vallow has a lot of people disappearing and dying around her. And so there was a bunch of speculation that somehow Alex Cox, the brother, had something nefarious to happen to him. Well, guess what? The Maricopa County Coroner's Office released the autopsy results as it relates to Alex Cox. And right here in my hands is a copy of the medical examiner report. Cause of death, bilateral pulmonary thromboboli, whatever that is. I actually had to look it up, and it's really a pulmonary embolism. As I understand it, and I'm not a medical doctor, and I don't want to play one on TV, apparently a pulmonary embolism is a blockage in one of the pulmonary arteries in your lungs. In most cases, pulmonary embolisms are caused by blood clots that travel to the lung from deep veins in the legs or rarely from veins in other parts of the body. Manner of death for Alex Cox? Natural. So, part of that information, speculation, is solved. We're never going to have any more information as it relates to Alex killing Charles Vallow. He claimed self-defense, but guess what? Everybody's dead. The potential suspect or reinvestigation is now deceased. I really can't imagine the coroner's office or the district attorney's office spending much more time on this in light of the fact that the cause of death was natural. Next on the docket, our dumb criminal contestant of the week from last week that you, the viewers of Crime Talk, have chosen. And the winner is Katrina Morgan, 50. She's the one who called the police in Port Clinton about 10 p.m. on a Saturday to allege, falsely report that, quote, her crotch was ablaze. She called the police and asked if the fire department's hose was working, she said, because she needs somebody to put it out with their hose. Yes, Ms. Morgan, you are our dumb criminal contestant of the week. And you get a free Crime Talk mug at no expense to you. All you have to do is notify me at scott@scottreich.com, and we'll ship it to you as long as you send us an address. And for those of you who want a mug or other gear or merchandise and don't want to become a contestant, you may do so at the link below. But our dumb criminal contestant of the day is an unidentified, disgruntled former employee who drove semi-trucks. Really, the lesson here is that if you're going to fire somebody, don't drive your Ferrari to the office that day. According to police reports, a newly hired and deemed not fit truck driver for the job was let go after hauling only one load. After apparently trying to keep his job and despite the company's amicable attempts to part ways and fully compensate the man, the fire driver calmly asked the owner if the Ferrari was his car. The owner, in fact, confirmed that it was, and it says, "Now you'll see what happens when people F with me." Yes, you can only imagine. The recently fired trucker allegedly ran towards a nearby truck, got in, made some serious tracks, and after nearly running over the unlucky owner of the Ferrari, used the Ferrari's hood as a de facto ramp. Obviously, the police were called, and the truck driver, in fact, was arrested. The unidentified, disgruntled truck driver said that he was, in fact, not properly paid, which is why he did what he did. But not being paid is not a reason to destroy another's property, let alone a Ferrari. He should have just let that one go, because I think that particular Ferrari GTC4 Lusso start about $160,000. He's going to have a lot of truck driving to do to pay some restitution on that if, of course, he ever gets a job again as a truck driver. So the unidentified, disgruntled truck driver is our dumb criminal contestant of the day. He will have a chance to become the winner of the week and, in fact, a chance to win a Crime Talk mug, just like Miss Morgan. Maybe if Miss Morgan is experiencing the same problem, she could fill her Crime Talk mug with water and help cool herself off. We'd also like to give a shout out to everyone who joined our Patreon. We talked about it. We saw several people sign up. Just want to say thank you. And in upcoming episodes, we'll in fact give a shout out to all of our Patreon members. We appreciate that. You don't have to do it. We appreciate that you do, and we're going to try and make it special for you. Thanks for watching Crime Talk. Let me know what you think about Ahmed Arbery's case and that of the McMichaels. Some people just didn't like my analysis. That's okay. We can agree to disagree sometimes. Just like in the Crime Talk family here, just like with your own family, sometimes you have to agree to disagree. I think the McMichaels have some serious issues. And guess what? If I'm wrong, I'll be the first one to let you know that I made a mistake. I think, though, that my analysis is correct. But if new facts become available, it may change my mind. Thanks for watching. Have a great day.